Hi, this is Pastor Matt, and I want to welcome you to our Blue Oaks Church podcast. At the end of this episode, feel free to download our Blue Oaks Church app, where you'll be able to access resources, events, and ways to get connected at Blue Oaks and in the community. The app is the easiest way to share this content with a friend, and it's the easiest way to keep up with everything going on around Blue Oaks. Most importantly, though, I just hope that you enjoy this episode and it inspires you to take your next step in your faith journey.
A lot of times I have the sense that I ought to do something or a sense of what kind of person I want to become. But then I get stopped by a single two-word phrase, but I know how to work out and to get in shape, but I feel kind of tired. I know it would be great to get into a small group and to form deep relationships, but I am kind of an introvert. I would love to live relaxed and confident, but I worry. I would love to have my finances in terrific order and to be generous, but I spend too much. I know I should eat kale and quinoa and tofu, but I love butter, sugar, and bacon. But I is what might be called a defeater belief. It's not just that it keeps me from succeeding at doing what really matters, but it will stop me from even trying. And then I'll never even know if I could have done it. But I can't do it. That little phrase actually occurs in the Bible a whole bunch of times as kind of a reason or an excuse for not doing what God calls someone to do. God says, Moses, I want you to go to Pharaoh and I want you to tell him to let my people go. Moses says, but I am slow of speech and I'm slow of tongue. God goes to Gideon and says, I want you to deliver my people from the Midianites. And Gideon says, but I am the least in my family. God says to Jeremiah, I want you to prophesy and to speak my word to my people. Jeremiah says, but I don't know how to speak. I'm only a child, I'm too young. Esther, go to the king and save Israel. But I've not been called by the king for 30 days. Abraham, become the father of a great nation, but I am too old. Peter, cast the nets on the other side of the boat and I'll do a miraculous thing for you, but I've tried all night. Over and over and over and over, we see these words, but I can't, but I won't, but I shouldn't. It's very interesting. God pretty much never actually disagrees with any of these statements. He doesn't say, Moses, you're a pretty good speaker, or Abraham, you're really not that old. He never disputes their inadequacy. Humanly, we often do. Like, we often engage in what might be called the denial of inadequacy. No. You can do this. Like, you're amazing. That was actually a bit of a technique in the ancient world where Paul was writing. You know, we're studying this book of 1 Corinthians, this letter that Paul wrote to the Corinthian church. And Corinth was a real tough place. It was tough on people. It was a very competitive startup culture. There was a lot going on there economically. And we've seen where there are sayings like only the tough survive in Corinth, and not for every man is the voyage to Corinth. Corinth was a place of pressure. It will eat you up and spit you out. And as it turns out, apparently the people who were a part of the church at Corinth were, for the most part, people who would not have ranked too highly on the adequacy scale. They were not people who were impressive by Corinthian standards. There was actually ancient advice that said to speakers or writers that if they were trying to win a following or trying to commend themselves or gain credibility with an audience, that one of the techniques that you should use was to throw some praise out to your audience. Let them know that you recognize how intelligent they are or how influential they are or how well-born they are or, you know, how connected or powerful they are. Now, with all of that as the backdrop, try to imagine how the people in that little church of Corinth felt when Paul's letter to them is being read out loud for the first time for them all to hear together when they gathered. And this is Paul's description of them, beginning in this letter. Brothers and sisters, think of what you were when you were called. Not many of you are wise by human standards. Not many were influential. Not many were of noble birth. Like, that was an odd way to address a crowd in Corinth. Paul doesn't start by saying, hey, Corinth, you've got it. I mean, you've got high IQ, you've got high EQ, you got a lot of resources, you got a lot of connections, you got a lot of potential. Like, God is so excited to have you on the team now. Instead, Paul actually invites them to reflect on what we might call the review of personal inadequacy. Corinth, wise? Not so much. Influential? Not so much. Well-born? Great gene pool? Not really. Paul is incredibly candid about this. He leads on this. He invites them to reflect on this. Then the implications that he draws from this are even more remarkable. He doesn't say, you know, you're not all that, Corinth. So kind of lower your expectations. Don't dream big. Don't expect to do anything marvelous for God or influential in the world. He doesn't go there. He doesn't say, thank God like a few of you are rich. Thank God a few of you are smart. And we'll just kind of build things around you. No, he says, you expect great things now because God is up to something that no one could have anticipated and that no one could have done but God. But God chose the foolish things. Literally, the text says just foolish. Could also be translated foolish ones or foolish people. But God chose the foolish things to shame the wise. God chose the weak things of the world to shame the strong. God chose the lowly things of this world and the despised things and the things that are not to nullify the things that are, so that no one may boast before him. It is because of him that you are in Christ Jesus, who has become for us wisdom from God, that is our righteousness, holiness, and redemption. Therefore, as it is written, so he's quoting here from Jeremiah, let the one who boasts, boast in the Lord. Jeremiah had said a long time earlier, don't boast in your riches, don't boast in your strength, don't boast in your wisdom. Let the one who boasts, boast in the Lord. Now there are two words that are the turning point of this whole passage. They were what changed everything in Paul's life. And they could be the turning point for your life and for my life if we want them to be. There are the words, but God. But God, Paul says. But God is now doing in Corinth with you what God already began on the cross with Jesus. That is overturning human expectations, reversing who matters and who doesn't, elevating the lowly, changing death into life, turning guilt into innocence, taking what the world regarded as abject failure and making it into glorious victory. But God. If you carry nothing away from this message, I just want you to carry those two words, but God. But God means this world does not get the last word on who you are or what you'll become or what you might do. This world may say your situation is never going to change. This world may say that addiction will always enslave you. That depression will always defeat you. That failure will always define you. That past will always haunt you. That future will always frighten you. That weakness will always suppress you. But God says otherwise. But God begs to differ. But God. That phrase gets used over and over and over in the Bible. But God. Joseph said it to his brothers who sold him into slavery for crying out loud. Years later, when he understood from a different perspective, he said to them, you intended it to harm me, but God intended it for good. And it did great good. The psalmist said, my flesh and my heart might fail, they will, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. Jesus said, with human beings, it is impossible. Even salvation is impossible. But with God, all things are possible. But God. So stop excusing yourself, letting yourself off the hook, whining about your own inadequacy that gets you out of God's calling on your life. But I. We all say it. I know this sounds odd. I just don't know how else to put it. God is bigger than your butt. One T. Of course you're not smart enough. Of course you're not strong enough. Of course you're not good enough. But God has chosen the foolish, the weak, the lowly, the meek, the timid, the too shy, the too loud, the not very polished, the not very accomplished, they're not very connected. So that whatever is going on in your heart or in your job or in your family or with your money or with your children or with your health, and it may look really bad, I know, but God, I tell you, sin, death, pain, and hell, they are real, but they are not final, because the power of the cross and the resurrection has not yet finished making its mark on this sorry world, but God. Now, Paul brings this to Corinth, but God, the lowly, not very wise, not very influential. You think the barrier is tough? I mean, it has nothing on Corinth. In Corinth, it was so competitive, even slaves would engage in competition with other slaves in the household to see who looked the most elite, who looked the most impressive, who looked the most accomplished or the most attractive. But God says otherwise about every human being. There is no too lowly. This goes way back to the Old Testament in the book of 1 Samuel, when an unlikely character by the name of David is going to be anointed king. God's prophet Samuel says this: people look at the outward appearance. Corinth looks at the outward appearance. The Bay Area looks at the outward appearance. What are your degrees? How do you look? How smart are you? How attractive are you? But God looks at the heart. What does God see? What does God feel when he looks at a human being, even the most lowly, even the most uneducated, even the most inadequate? What does God feel when he looks at any single human being on the planet, whatever their age, whatever their color, whatever their background? What goes on in the heart of God? Is it just the rich? Is it just the strong? Is it just the powerful? How much does every life matter to God? Now, you might think, you know, maybe the church at Corinth had a lot of lowly people who were pretty inadequate, but surely Paul had a lot of confidence in his adequacy. I mean, he was a brilliant, educated man. This is where it gets even weirder in his writings. There were other wannabe leaders and self-proclaimed apostles who came to Corinth, and they tried to pull people away from Paul, and particularly the message of the crucified Jesus and the cross, that at the center of everything is this great reversal, you know, a self-sacrificing love and humility and servanthood is really the, you know, the greatness, turning everything upside down. They weren't so much into that. And so they compared their ministry to Paul's. That's what these kind of leaders would do. They said they had a greater vision than Paul. They said they could work greater miracles. They were perceived to be more considerably eloquent than Paul. And they attracted these great financial backers, these sponsors who gave them all kinds of money. And Paul wouldn't even go there. So Paul's writing to the church at Corinth in part to try to win them back to this message of the lowly Jesus and the cross. And we would expect Paul, in order to persuade people to follow him and to listen to him, to list his ministry credentials and his achievements. You know, number of souls saved, number of churches started, number of sermons preached, number of converts, number of letters written, because he's writing the New Testament, for crying out loud. He does none of that. What he said to commend himself to them was the oddest thing, I think, in the history of human literature. This is what he said: I have been in prison more frequently. Look, who brags about that? Been flogged more severely. Good for you, Paul. And been exposed to death again and again. Do you understand? These were not sources of success or impressiveness in the ancient world, not in Corinth. He lists his failures and his problems and his rejections and his humiliations, and he's being like let over a wall of a city in a basket, like Rome would honor soldiers when they were laying siege to a city. And the first one to climb over the wall would get a medal. No one's getting a medal for being humiliated and kicked out of the city and having to escape through a little basket. It's a celebration of personal weakness and inadequacy. And it peaks in this: in order to keep me from becoming conceited, I was given a thorn in my flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me. Three times I pleaded with the Lord to take it away from me. But God does not. Now, this is a remarkable statement. Apparently, Paul has a problem with a tendency to get conceited. Can you get conceited? Or are you better than the Apostle Paul? Well, Paul had that problem. And it's so bad that he's given some painful and shameful condition that he calls a thorn in his flesh. There were all kinds of guesses over the centuries about what it might have been based on the things that we know about Paul's life. It might have been a vision problem. Some people think it might possibly have been epilepsy. Some people guess because he had been beaten and shipwrecked through horrible trauma that it was some form of what we now know as PTSD. Maybe Paul was suffering from anxiety. We know people said that he was not eloquent or impressive as a person. Maybe he had a speech defect. Maybe he stuttered badly. Maybe he had a weight problem. Like whatever it is, it's a source of ridicule and humiliation and shame for him. And if that's not bad enough, that he's conceited and he has this shameful condition, he prays and asks God to remove it. And his prayers are a failure three times. These other apostles coming to Corinth, they're strong, they're successful, they're eloquent, they're wealthy. They're poster boys for God and God's life. Paul is a train wreck, a beaten, imprisoned, whipped, tent-making, conceit-prone, thorn-carrying, prayer-failing, self-confessed weakling. And you're going to lead with that. Like, those are your credentials. Like, why on earth would anyone ever talk that way about themselves? One reason, two words, but God. But he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong. Who talks like this? Like, who thinks this way? Who views life this way? Paul, you can't be serious, but he is. What must your view of reality in God be like for you to have the capacity to delight in weakness? Because he's convinced with Jesus, everyone has a source of strength outside of themselves. Everyone has a calling, even the most lowly. And everyone has a thorn, even the most exalted. And so the question is, are you going to say, but I, or are you going to say, but God? But I can't, or but God can. The answer you choose will determine the life that you lead. At the first church I worked at, in the first year of working there, I had an ear problem that prevented me from teaching. It's been a long time ago now. It was back when I was going to graduate school in Chicago. And I would talk and it would sound like I had a bucket on my head and I could hear myself talking. I could hear myself breathing. The slight noise in my head was like amplified into my eardrum. I would start to teach and the pain in my ear would just be so distracting that I couldn't concentrate. Like I thought I would never teach again. People had a lot of advice for me. Some people would say, you know, just have more faith. Like just trust God more. I went to a doctor. I was hoping there would be some kind of real simple physical explanation. There was nothing they can do. It was scary. I found this thing that I thought I was supposed to do with my life, teach the Bible. I didn't know if I was going to be able to do it. It was a very humbling thing for me. And I prayed for a long time, God, would you make this go away? Would you heal my ear? And he didn't. And I'll tell you the passage of scripture that just became mine during that time. It was what we just read from the Apostle Paul. There was given to me a thorn in my flesh. Three times I pleaded with the Lord to take it away from me. Three times God said no. But then God said to Paul, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. That was 25 years ago. 25 years ago, the elders of the church prayed for me and I was healed. I had no trouble with my ear except for one time about 15 years ago, it came back and I asked for prayer from the prayer team and they prayed for me and I was healed. And it hasn't happened again since. But to this day, there will be moments when I stand here to teach and I wonder if it's going to come back. But I am afraid. But I am weak. But I feel stressed. But I think it's going to happen again. After 25 years, there's enough weakness in me that I don't know if I'm going to be healed of it indefinitely or if it's going to come back like it did 15 years ago. God then didn't take away the weakness. God did not take the stress away. God didn't take the fear away. God didn't even take the feeling away. God didn't give me any guarantees. But God, as of this week, has kept my hearing intact so that I can teach today. But God. If we had time, we could line up everyone in the church to tell all of our but God stories. And I wish we could do that. And maybe we'll do that one day in heaven. But I've asked Lisa if she would share with you her story. She's going to do that now.
All right. So I was turned on to drugs and alcohol when I was 14. And I began chasing that feeling that I got for the next 29 years. I was so uncomfortable in my own skin and I wanted to be anyone but me. And if I was high, at least for a little while, I could numb out of my feelings. You know, my feelings like, but I'm hopeless, but I hate myself, but I don't deserve anything good, but I don't want to live anymore. But God redeemed and transformed me. You know, for the longest time, I thought being set free and finding sobriety would be my only story. And certainly there wouldn't be anything bigger than this story, right? For a long time, I believed it would always define me. And don't get me wrong, it's important and it's a good story. And without this story, I would never be able to tell you this next one. But God, right? God had more. So my mom died in 2013. And at one of the most painful times in my life, the church that she'd affiliated herself with her whole life made planning her memorial service a very stressful and really a horrible experience. It was so hard to navigate, and it also set in motion this question that I began to ask myself. What do people with no church affiliation do when their loved one dies? So on the year anniversary of my mom's death, as I was standing at her graveside, I began wondering and asking questions out loud. Yes, in the cemetery, out loud talking. And God responded. Okay, this gets really, really weird, right? His voice was almost audible. I want you to quit your job and help people navigate this experience so it's easier for them. I want you to talk at funerals. And it was so real that I started looking around for who said that to me. You know, there were a lot of people there that day in the cemetery, but they were all dead. Well, except for the groundskeeper. He was the only other person living in the cemetery that day, and it wasn't him talking. I warned you this was gonna get weird. And of course, I was in disbelief and tried to dismiss this voice, but it just wouldn't stop. So I finally threw my arms up in the air. I looked up at the sky and I yelled, "Seriously? Like, this is your big plan for me, God?" And to this day, I wonder what that groundskeeper must have been thinking as he's hearing and seeing me yelling and waving my arms around. You know, my plan had been to stay employed where I worked until I retired. And there was a time that I loved the job that I had, but that wasn't the case anymore. You know, I was miserable and I was getting sick from all the stress had become corporate and it was just so, so intense. You know, but these things, but I'm too old to do anything else. But I don't have a college degree, but I'm not smart enough, but I'm not good enough, but I won't ever find another job, but I'm afraid, I'm scared. But the command from God was clear, quit your job and talk at funerals. So I was standing at my mom's grave on August 26, 2014, and on September 3rd, just a few days later, I left my job. Like I literally got up from my desk, walked out of my office, left the building and never went back. I mean, come on, talk at funerals? Like who in their right mind would do something like this? I just knew though, without any doubt that it was God and it's what he was asking me to do. And you guys, my own family even held an intervention for me because they thought I'd relapsed and lost my mind. And just in case it wasn't weird and awkward enough already, I literally told everyone this story as it was happening. I was so sure it was God speaking to me that I wanted people to be along on the journey with me. I didn't want to get to whatever the other side was and have a cool story to share. I wanted people to know and be part of it as it was happening. I wanted all of us to be amazed. And I found out later there were a lot of people that thought I was nuts, that I'd lost my mind, that something was really wrong with me. There's still one lady who walks the other way if I happen to see her around town. A week and a half after leaving my job, an attendee from Blue Oaks died, and I went with Pastor Matt to meet with the family. Something I'd never been asked to do before. So just think about that for a second. A week and a half after having this encounter with God, I'm standing in someone's house helping a family plan a memorial service. You know, Matt didn't know anything about this encounter when he asked me if I could go with him, but he found out when we were leaving That's when I shared with him this whole God told me to quit my job and talk at funerals story. And I'll never forget the look on his face either. You know, he said that he wasn't sure there'd be full-time work in this industry, and he wondered what my family thought. I also learned recently he was also on board with the leases on the crazy train track. You know, he might never have asked me to accompany him if I'd boldly proclaimed this to him before that day. And get this, it just so happened there was someone present at the memorial service whose wife died a few weeks later, and I was asked to plan and officiate her service. More confirmation. And confirmation like that occurred throughout this whole thing. And when I would start to fall apart, wish I'd stuck it out at my job, doubted that I'd actually heard from God, I had no idea what to do next. Things were on the brink of collapse. You know, God would show up in the most incredible ways. Do you trust me, Lisa? Do you trust me? And it was impossible to miss that he was orchestrating these events. They were too specific, too much evidence that it was God. You know, despite the many times that God showed up and confirmed I was on the right track, my faith would still be tested. Doubt would consume me, and I would cry out to God, but God, I'm terrified. But God, I thought you told me to do this thing, but I misunderstood. I don't have a business plan, but I'm going to fail. But God, I'll never earn enough to contribute what I need to our house. But God, I told everyone. But God, I'm so confused. What was I thinking? I felt so embarrassed at times, you know, kicking myself for opening my mouth. I told everyone, like I literally told everyone. Why couldn't I just see how it went? If it turned out, it would have been a cool story. Why'd I need to walk around boldly proclaiming, God told me to quit my job and talk at funerals, and the reason I'm boldly proclaiming this is so that all of our faith will be stretched when we see what he does. You know, I was so certain that God was up to something and wanted everyone to know before the story was written so that we could praise God together at the end. People would be able to testify that the story was true. And for the record, I don't love being around death and talking at funerals. I do love people, though, and death is part of life. Talking at funerals has never been a life goal of mine. I was just being obedient to God's call. Somewhere along the way, I realized that the whole funeral gig was an accelerated course in planning and practice for speaking so that I could lead services and deliver messages. It set me up for the next thing, you know, becoming a licensed pastor, leading chapel services in senior communities. And now, I oversee our care and compassion ministries. I mean, in what world does this stuff happen? In what world does stuff like this happen? Well, that answer is simple. In God's world, all things are possible because he's able to do exceedingly more than we could ask or think. You know, but I'm not worthy, but I'm a loser, but I'm not educated, but I'm a drug addict and alcoholic, but I don't deserve forgiveness. And I don't deserve any of this blessing. And in my wildest imagination, I could have never dreamed it up. I couldn't. Who could dream this stuff up? But it's true. I can't, and I didn't. But God can, and he did. But God can't, and he will, for you too.
You see, God chooses the foolish, the weak, the lowly, the meek, the timid, the too shy, the too loud, the not very polished, the not very accomplished. And that includes me, and that includes you. And we know this because we're told in the Bible, above all else, Jesus of Nazareth was put to death by nailing him to a cross, but God raised him from the dead, freeing him from the agony of death because it was impossible for death to keep its hold on him. And death cannot keep its hold on you either, but God. What if we just keep praying? And what if we just keep serving and dreaming and asking? And what if God could move in each of us the way he did in Lisa? When you pray, when you serve, when you give, when you volunteer, when you befriend someone, when you invite someone, when you love someone, when your heart gets broken and your greatest dream dies and you ask God to redeem the suffering and you trust God to give you a new dream that you cannot even imagine, you become part of an unseen spiritual hinge on which the doors of human history turn. But God. And another door opens. So this week, Those are your two words, but God. Not but I, but God. So don't give up. Don't stop dreaming. Don't stop praying. Don't give in to sin. Whatever hurt or heartbreak you're facing, when you feel inadequate, and you will, when you feel unspiritual, and you will, when you're lonely or confused or frightened, when you know you're not smart enough or strong enough or rich enough, or when you feel like a loser nobody, but God, but God, but God. Let me pray for you. God, we all know what it feels like to be inadequate, but I can't, but I'm afraid, but I'm not smart enough, but I don't know enough, but I have a past because I did so-and-so, but I sin, but I'm not qualified. Whatever it is, we have these fears about doing the things that you're calling us to do. God, would you help us to see from your perspective, to see from the perspective of the Apostle Paul in this passage that we just studied, that in our weakness, you're strong. So help us to celebrate our inadequacies, to live in those realities of our inadequacies, because that's gonna allow us to trust you more. And God, when we're there, would you just allow us to hear so clearly from you that you're calling us to do what it is that you want us to do? Just make that so clear that we can't fight it, that we can't excuse it, that we will only be able to rely on you and your strength in our life to accomplish it, so that you'll get the glory, not us. God, help us through our weaknesses to accomplish great things for you. Help us to take great risks. Help us to dream great dreams. God, would you do a work in us and through us? We trust you for that. I ask it in Jesus' name, amen.
Hey, once again, thanks for listening. We hope you found something in this week's message to take away and apply to your life this week. If you live in the Bay Area, we would love to have you join us for one of our weekend services. For directions or information about what we have for you or your family, your students, you can go to blueoaks.church or download the app today. And we hope to see you on Sunday soon.